This is the Big Sky Boneheads podcast. Thank you for taking some time this week. We are on the road. It's the first time we've ever done this.
Yeah, we made a little road trip.
Yeah, my name is Michael Gray. His name is Scott Hershey, and we are inside the headquarters for Kennetrek Boots, joined by Chaz Arthur and Jim Wingem, the marketing and president of the company. We're here amongst a lot of dead animals.
It's so cool.
Man, your lobby is rad. I've got all kinds of pictures I'll be showing my kids when I get home. Let me start there. Is it all fun and games? Because I walk in this place and it's like Candyland. Yeah. Is that a part of the attraction when you get into anything involving the outdoors? Because on the one side, you can say, well, we work in boots and socks and clothes. But on the other hand, man, being tied in with the outdoors the way that you guys are is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the foundation of the company is my historical love of outdoors, hunting, fishing. I mean, I'm a Montana kid, born and raised, and just grew up, I grew up, probably 8 years old running down pheasants, that my father had shot.
You were the dog.
That's exactly right. I was a bird dog and just have had a love for the outdoors ever since. And I can remember him saying, many, many times, like, I've always loved hunting and fishing, but man, you've taken it to a new level. I don't know if that was complimentary.
Well, turning it into a business, we've talked to guys like that. We just had our last episode with Kit and Trevor Johnson from Helena, who've got a fishing business. Not quite on the scale that Kennetrek is, but turning something you love into a job isn't always a positive thing for some people because you turn it into a job. But you have created something here that might be even a little bigger than you expected it to be. So it's a bigger job, but have you still found a way to find time to do all that outdoor stuff you loved originally?
Yeah. I mean, there was probably some time period there where we were, as a startup, I had a whole career at Schnee's, which is another Montana boot company. And when they sold, I had one partner in one ear and one in the other ear that, for like 10 years saying they wanted to do something. And so then when that sale came, I thought, well, either I have to jump now or else, I'm going to stay forever. And so I decided to pool all our money together. And then it was like, being a base jumper, jumping off a bridge and promptly lost everything that we'd ever saved. And typical small business startup, just went down and down and down. And I used to joke that we're getting a run at it to get up the other side. And that was funny for like the first 3 years.
Side's still there.
Kind of worth it after a while. They're like, hey, it's time to, be profitable and quit funding this this adventure. But anyway, we've been super blessed and over the years it's been quite a story. And so two of the partners are really avid hunters, and myself and Bob Scher, who's a optometrist from Great Falls, and then my brother-in-law is the other partner, and he's more of a financial expert, massive fly fisherman, but not so much in the hunting world. And so my background is mechanical engineering out of MSU, and so dovetailing the whole footwear experience that I had at Schnee's, the love for the outdoors and hunting, the mechanical knowledge, which is all kind of fit together, all the pieces of the puzzle. And then really in reality, I became more of a marketer than anything, and that I did at Schnee's as well.
Well, you really kind of buried the headline, because for my money, getting into business with my brother-in-law would have been the scariest thing imaginable.
Oh, there were times. I'm sure that both of us questioned the sanity of that operation.
Well, and it doesn't hurt that you guys have, I'm not saying this as an opinion piece, it's a time-tested, amazing product. The brand is well known for producing amazing quality footwear. My wife has a brand new pair of Kennetreks that I got her for Christmas. She told me she's been in Montana for what seems like ever. And she's like, well, I don't really have winter boots. Like, what are you talking about? She's like, I don't have any like warm ones. And she put the Dr. Evil laser, like the warm ones. I'm like, All right, and Christmas. This was in November, and so, you know, fixed it and fixed it for some time. What went into ultimately the design when you're coming up with something? There are lots of boots. There are lots of reasons to buy boots. There are lots of name brand boots. There are lots of things like that out there. There must have been some kind of brainchild behind this. I imagine as an engineer, you were like, I kind of have an idea of where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically, you know, my physical and mental maladies, I would say, a combination of those two. And the first one is that I'm a really tall, gangly guy with bad feet. Narrow feet, high arches, narrow heels, terribly prone to blistering. And then I had the mental problem was that I developed a love for sheep hunting. Those two don't
match up, right?
People with great feet would still wish they hadn't.
Absolutely brutal. Yeah. And so ironically, my one partner and I were on a sheep hunt in the Northwest Territories, and it wasn't going well. You know, I mean, just buckets and buckets of rain for days, and, you know, spent a lot of time in the tent and had to get moved 2-3 times. We just had a brutal hunt. And I remember my feet had gashes. I mean, like, I thought, I'm going to lose my feet. They're so bad. I mean, they're just the wounds, you know, and I was wearing the best boots that were available. And so you talk about a motivator. I'm like, there has to be a better way. There has to be other guys like me, you know, that have, you know, sensitive feet or bad feet and, you know, want to clamber around the mountains and, you know, pursue these animals. It was just like, this is impossible. There has to be a better way. And so that, you know, kind of was the motivator. I mean, like, deep scars, physical scars and mental scars as well. So, you know, I mean, one thing led to another, and that was kind of the motivation behind it, was to really develop a absolutely fantastic mountain boot that was more geared and fit towards North American feet, which, you know, a lot of people, you know, without getting into the weeds too much, it's like...
No, get into the weeds. Yeah. I'm fascinated by the notion of a North American foot.
Yeah, North American feet. I mean, typically, if you've ever traveled in Europe, you know, like, most of the very best footwear is either made in Germany or Italy. And there's a vast difference in the physiology, right, of I don't know if it's the dairy industry or what, but we're way taller, you know. I mean, the average foot size is significant. Like, when we started making our boots in Italy, they stopped at a size 12. Well, in North America, we go up to a size 16.
My son is 12. He's already in wearing an 11 and a half. So
yeah. I mean, so just, I mean, and I don't know if that's just the nutrition is so good. Like I say, that we drink a lot of milk, you know, in the formative years or what, but I mean, the average foot size in the Civil War was a size 8, you know, the bell curve, if you picture, it would be a size 8. Well, now it's 10 and a half, you know,
right.
And so that's been a steady progression in larger feet. And with the larger feet tend to come a more pronounced heel, you know, perhaps higher arches, you know, I mean, it's just a disproportional foot. And I guess what I'm saying is there is a lot of guys out there that are like me that have, you know, difficulty with footwear. So you could find really well-made footwear from, again, this would be Northern Italy or Germany, but they tend to have a much wider heel pocket, much lower, you know, they don't have the high arch, you know, like the super feet supportive footbeds don't have that. So anyway, it's a marriage of the two different things, you know, the concept of getting a better performing. And those guys are tough, you know, the Europeans are tough. They used to walk around on wooden boards, you know, and just like, ugh.
You know, it's like, well, the wooden shoes of the Dutch, like, right?
I'm talking more of the Swiss guys, well, you know, that are climbing around in the Alps.
No, that's,
you know, they're like, you just tough it out. You know, it's like, well, I'm kind of more of a wimp.
How about no?
If you tear them up long enough, they'll heal and they'll turn into scar tissue.
Exactly.
Get through the process.
Yeah, there's different ways to approach things. So,
and you got to take all of that knowledge about feet. You got to turn it into the product. I know it's Chaz's job to turn that into a social media post once in a while or an advertisement. Or graphics, you got to do that everything he just said in a matter of a few letters, a few sentences, Chaz, it's got to be quite a, at least you got a wealth of things to work with there. How do you do that? What's the overall message of the company when it comes to these boots?
I think like durability, longevity, and comfort. And with that durability and support, you've got extremely lightweight as well. And that's just a kind of a magical combo for people to do the activities they want to do.
And when you get to the actual product, I mean, you were talking about you got into feet into in a level that, you know, the average Joe can't sure. do. But it's got a result. The product of these things, the way they're made, the craftsmanship that goes into mm-hmm. them, the actual hands-on. It reminded me a lot of one of your neighbors here from Gibson Guitars. I saw a video yes. one time of Gibson Guitars being made, and I'm like, oh, there's a reason why these things are great. A craftsman has to do this. You can't just come in, have a guy show it to you, and then do it to create these products. There's such an artistry to the way they're created. How do you find those people? How did you get the people to actually make what you had in mind?
Yeah, it's so our main factory is in Italy, and they're a third generation, fourth generation boot factory. And it's like I almost call him like, you know, my twin brother from another mother, you know, you know, my Italian counterpart there. And it's kind of funny because I speak very zero Italian and he speaks very broken English, but the two of us can communicate pretty well through, you know, whether it's mechanical drawings or, you know, me using Photoshop and just my hard-headed determination as a perfectionist to never settle. And I can remember, you know, several years, you know, him just coming to me just saying, can you please have 1 year that you don't change anything? And I'm like, no. Only if we hit perfection and there's nothing I can come up with. You know, and that might be in design, that might be in materials, that might be in, you know, in quality control and craftsmanship. I mean, they're, you know, you're exactly right. I mean, they truly are artisans, and they've been doing it for so long, and they're so good at what they do. We're just working on a video now that I can't wait to release because, you know, the factory, and we started in their grandfather's basement, you know. I mean, they started tiny, and they have grown. They just built I don't know how big that building is. It's got to be 100,000 to, you know, 150,000 square feet, something like that. I mean, it's a monstrous factory, all perfectly climate controlled, and I'm kind of like, huh, we've done something here because we basically funded all of that, or our customers.
It's like you're building Ferraris, only you're building boots.
Oh, it's unbelievable, you know. And like I say, they have perfect climate control. And we just did this video, and again, Chaz is working on that. I think you guys might even be doing
a
little bit of voiceover. Right. And it is so cool to just both the, you know, the marriage of the unbelievable technology and the machinery. You know, just precision, you know, as far as heat activated glues and, like I say, the length of time that those are heated up and the humidity levels, and they monitor all of that. It's just impressive. But then at the same time, you have that artisanship that crawls in there where you see that guy placing the rands, you know, it's just so precise, just beautiful work. And just their pride, you know. I mean, they look at every single boot. It's amazing.
How did they draw a relationship with Montana? Because I imagine them over in Italy. I'm a big Formula One fan.
Yeah.
So like Ferrari's my team.
You understand?
Guys that do this stuff, and then you see them, and they're in a vineyard, and they're having a perfectly manicured little lunch picnic thing, and yes. It's all so super Italian. And then I'm trying to imagine them dealing with knuckle draggers like Scott and I.
Yeah.
Back here in Montana in the United States, like these boots are so that we can stomp up and down these hills and kill elk. Have they come over here? Have they experienced what they're doing?
They really haven't. I mean, we've had a little bit of touches in hunting, but they're just hard workers, you know, and they have been all their life. And that's what they, you know, they ski and they do some different things. And they're on the foot of the Alps there, you know, in the Dolomites. And so they're pretty familiar with very rugged country. So they understand the use, they understand the application, but they don't necessarily wear the product, which is funny.
That is funny. Because if you built 100,000 square foot factory, I would imagine you'd want to stomp around in the things a little bit to see what all the hubbub was about.
Not necessarily. They drive fast cars. They ride bikes a lot. You know, I mean, so they're pretty athletic, but just it's just a different world. You know, I mean, the hunting community is so small compared to what it is in North America.
In that aspect of it, the Montana connection, having a business like this based in Montana, you're a Montana guy, you understand what Montana's lifestyle is, what the people are like. But you're also in an area that's changed a lot. I mean, we're looking out almost to Bozeman. We're in the Four Corners area, right outside the window. And what have you seen? Like, so you got Chaz here. He's seen this. Bozeman gets all the grief around the state of Montana now, like it's not part of Montana. But you guys are solidified here. What is it like to be? Why are you located here? I think is the overall first question. And then what's it like to see that kind of paradox in the vision of what this is in Montana?
Yeah, I have been here since 1982. You know, that's a long time ago. You know, and it was completely different. You know,
I think it couldn't have been more different.
Yeah, it was like a cow town. I mean, it was even with the students, it was 10,000 people. Now I think we just crossed over 100,000 in the valley, and they're saying up to 300,000 within the next, 10 to 20 years. I'm like, I can't even comprehend that.
Right.
But when we started, I mean, obviously when I was with Schnee's all those years, we were a very small company, and grew and grew and grew. And man, now you look at all the outdoor companies that have flooded in here. It's just remarkable. I mean, it just kind of draws, and whether it's the Meat Eater guys or Sims, right? I mean, that's just all of these outdoor companies that have chosen to hang out a shingle here. It's pretty amazing, and to see the growth is amazing. But what kept me here is I married my wife, and she had two sets of twins, and they've been very prolific, and so I've got eight, 18 grandchildren in valley. So the chance of me ever leaving, zero.
On the other hand, your cumulative real estate has got to be worth a fortune.
I'm pretty well stuck here.
18.
Chaz, what does that mean when you're talking to Montana people? I mean, Montana, you know what the outdoor atmosphere is like in an age of constant feedback from customers. And then you've got the constant feedback about Montana. What is it like, addressing customers as, hey, we're a Montana company, first of all? Like, and I know your base isn't just here, obviously, it's worldwide, but that customer base looking at the view of Montana has changed, and the view of outdoors overall, hunting. You can't post a hunting picture without getting some criticism about something. It could be your boots. I mean, it could be anything.
Oh, you did something wrong in that photo, I guarantee it.
But what has your experience been like as far as that changing over time when you're kind of the voice of the marketing and outdoor company?
It's been interesting. There's always things I don't particularly understand that happen, like especially with social media. Like if you post a pic of a hoofed animal, a trophy pic, that's fine. But don't post like a mountain lion
or a bear
or a wolf. That really gets people fired up, and
it should be the opposite, by the way.
Yeah,
only one of them can kill you back.
Right.
I always call this the animals with a good PR because they have an agency somewhere like, don't kill us. Everybody loves us. Mm. We're cute.
Yeah, and I mean, we're trying to kind of cater to all of our users, hikers, houndsmen, big game hunters, and it's just kind of striking a balance and kind of getting back to what you're asking about, the different demographics. It seems like that has been kind of the progression to where certain things aren't looked upon as fondly as others.
You got to walk a line because somebody can find the most banal thing can be found offensive, or suddenly you've got this outrage over something, and the outdoor world's full of that.
Yes, and I feel we don't try to pander to any particular thing. We just want to let everyone feel included and like their stuff gets shared, whether it's a person that's on a wolf hunt or someone that's killed a white-tailed deer.
At the same time, you've got to at some point want to reach through the screen and strangle the life out of these people. I went through this. I got my very first year, my first opening day of elk season, I got a bull elk. I had a guy light me up.
He's got to bring that up every podcast.
Why wouldn't you?
Everybody at the table has shot a bull elk. Raise your hand.
I lived in this state since I was 12, and I've never shot a bull elk. All right, let's just get that out there.
So anyway, like I was saying, so I shoot this bull elk on my first day ever.
First morning. It was the first morning.
It was the shortest hunt I've ever had. It was ridiculous. And I haven't gotten one since, and that's karma paying me back. But I got a guy on Facebook who lit me up. He's like, oh, you just kill things for the thrill of killing things. And I looked him. I always look up. I worked in sports media for a long time. And anytime you take some slack, I'm always like, I want to know your bona fides. Is this just what you do or whatever? Dude worked at a meat processing facility.
What?
Processing commercially raised chickens and pigs. And I'm like, and he had pictures of himself with his wife making homemade pizzas and all this stuff. I'm like, what, you think that pig that made that pepperoni died of natural causes? I'm like, this is going to feed my family for a year.
Right.
And I was floored by his stance, because he wasn't a vegan. He wasn't somebody who was hugging trees. He wasn't trying to save anything. I'm like, you got to be kidding. You work at a slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I have to disengage from social media every now and again, because I would reach through the screen and I let him know. I called his boss. I'm like, you got a guy that works at your factory who's giving hunters slack. You might want to know. How do you manage that when the inevitable trolls come through, the critics, people that are usually, in my experience, wildly uninformed? How do you deal with that? Especially when you're representing the brand, do you just let it lie? Do you have to just let them have their say and leave it be? Because as a company, I got to believe that's a slippery slope. Once you engage, you're in for a penny, in for a pound.
It is a slippery slope. I think a combo of letting it lay, like you say,
sure.
The best
thing that we have going for us is our customers are big. So they'll engage. They'll jump right in.
One of those battle scenes from Braveheart where they just ride down on them. Yeah,
exactly.
Good.
That happens a lot.
we have customers that are very, very passionate about our brand, about their product. You know, they're like, it's the best boot I've ever worn in my life. You know, it's like, I will never wear another boot. I mean, some of the, you know, like we have developed a medical orthopedic boot, and we sell lots of those to VA guys and old veterans, you know, have broken down feet. And the testimonial letters we get, they literally will make you cry. These guys are like, you gave me my life back, you know, like I thought I'd never, you know, see the mountains again. And it's like you've turned the clock back 10 years, and they just go on and on and on. So that kind of a passionate response, you know, from our customers is, it just goes a long way.
And it's got to be incredibly gratifying, not just from a loyalty standpoint, but also for seeing the trolls get theirs. Because I love seeing somebody who needs to get punched in the face get punched in the face. I'm a big fan of karma. I like it a lot.
Well, I think we're hearing the same thing that we've heard. We've talked to other successful people on this podcast from all different walks of life, different products, different services.
Mostly we're just trying to crack the code on how you become a successful person. Very self-serving. How'd you do that?
The underlying thing that we keep seeing is, you know, you always think like they make great business decisions. They know how to do finances. They know how to do marketing, like Chaz's job. But you also, the care of the product, the actual come right down to it, we want to make a good boot. The guys who we just did the fishing guides, they want the customer to have a good experience. There's an underlying theme to success, which is you can't fake sincerity about what you're doing. And every time we do it with this, I see it just kind of, that's where the light in the eyes come up. Like, we drug you out of your office doing, I don't know what it was.
It was more important than this.
It was definitely more important than this. But when you talk about that, you see kind of that initial passion that I think leads to success. And it's got to be something that you feel when you go out and put your own boots on and hunt.
And it's the care of the customer too, you know, predominantly it's through product quality, you know, the quality of the designs and the workmanships and the performance. And one of the things that we do, we're really tied to the customers, and that's with our repair center, you know. And so we literally resole thousands and thousands of pairs a year. And so, especially when we started, you know, that's where I spent most of my time is it's like we have all of these guinea pigs, so to speak, out there, right, that are boot testers, and they, I mean, like, we have some of the hardest wearers on the planet. I mean, I remember a Desert Sheep guide that sent me pictures through 6 weeks of Desert Sheep season. And it's like the first week, he kind of wore the toes off a little bit. The second week, I mean, by the time he's done with the season, you can see his feet are sticking out with his socks. And there's holes in the socks, too, so his toes are sticking out through that. I'm like, that's impossible. I mean, it's like he just held the boot to a belt sander, you know, and just ground it right down. I mean, so to be able to see those boots completely, and we could go back there and show you some of them that come in. I mean, it is absolutely amazing. I mean, I'm talking like completely bald. There is not one tread, you know, dimple left. I mean, just like the slickest tires you've ever seen. And then you could look at that boot and see, okay, well how did the upper hold up? You know, what's missing? What, you know, is there any failure?
You are an engineer.
Oh, yeah. You are an engineer
to your heart core.
For sure. You know, and I'm like, we need to fix that. We need to, you know, address that. Or, you know, and so that, again, that continual refinement of the product has really, I mean, I've been selling boots for a long, long time now. I'm gray as you are. Yeah.
I'm getting there. I remember 82.
Yeah, exactly. So it, you know, it's like I've been doing it for a long time, and this boot is now, I would say, it is nothing short of magical. I mean, as far as the fit, the performance, and that gives you such a confidence. I mean, doesn't it, Chaz? Like, when you're selling at it, Chaz goes out and does a lot of shows for us too, because we're a small
company. Another guy's
got
to believe in the product as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, you go out and you sell, and you just have such a confidence that, you know, when you fit a guy up in his right, correct size and everything, and you just know that this is going to be the best thing that he's ever had on his feet his whole entire life.
You also have to, in today's world, which has changed a bit, you also have to deal with a level of customer service now that I think has been, you know, you're more accountable because there is such an ability for unhappy customers to spread waves. They can get on the internet, they can get on Yelp, they can get on, you name it, your social media site, and light you on fire. And you're also competing with other customer service. Your product can be better. You also have to compete customer service wise with other labels, other brands, and that's never been more true than right now. And how do you guys do that? How do you address things if somebody has an issue, if they whatever their vocal, you know, who's the squeakiest wheel out there? How do you approach that?
Well, I mean, we've, like all companies, we've struggled with that, you know, because, I mean, a lot of times, let's just face it, I mean, customers have completely unrealistic expectations,
right?
You know, I mean, like these boots wore out in 2 years. I expected to get longer than that. It's like, okay, well, related to what? Do you have the same conversation with your tire guy?
How many miles do they have?
Right. It's like, you know, and what were you wearing them on? And, I mean, you know, it turns out they're usually a Desert Sheep guide or something, and they're in razor rocks, and they just shred them. I mean, most guys, by and large, you kind of almost have to go in with the assumption that generally people are good. There's always a few bad apples, but generally people are good. And you know, we have come to the conclusion that you're far better off just bending over backwards. I mean, even if it's completely unjustified, and I always have this discussion with our customer service team, because a lot of times you kind of get your back up and say, but that's just not right.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just it's totally unrealistic. And I'm like,
is it worth it?
It's not worth your time. Mm-hmm. It's not worth your aggravation, right, as a customer service person. And so, like, I've really, you know, tried to make certain that we have freed them up to be able to make it right with that customer. And I mean, sometimes you just absolutely can't make somebody happy no matter what. You know, I mean, you can give them a new pair of boots, give them a full refund, even if they didn't buy them here. I mean, you can do all kinds of stuff, and they're still not going to be happy.
No, some people are just miserable.
Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, and you're just like, I try to say, well, just look at it that way, that, you know, you've done everything that you possibly can. And the thing is, it does pay big dividends. I mean, wouldn't you say, Chaz, that we have seen an uptick in our reputation since we've kind of moved in that direction?
Definitely, yeah. And as you're talking here, it makes me kind of laugh, because you're talking about a guy that wore out boots in 6 months and a guy that wore them out in 2 years. And my first pair of hard scrabbles lasted me 15 years. I still have them.
Well, if you ever perfect those boots, like you said, and don't have to make any changes, nobody's ever going to come back and get another pair of boots. Yeah, you're going to last forever. That's kind of the perfect boot, isn't it?
Yeah. No, it really isn't.
What, I don't want to call this a downside. I think it's a unique situation. We talked about the, you know, the kind of echo chambers that can exist online, but you're a Montana guy doing Montana business with a Montana company, serving people that are going to use your boots the same way you are. Mm-hmm. And we know in Montana, people let you know.
Oh yeah.
What they think, whether you ask them or not.
They will.
And so, you walk around and somebody's like, oh, where do you work? Do you lie? Because I do sometimes. I won't tell them. Like, I don't want to tell them I work on the radio because then they're going to tell me what they think of my show. But, you know, you've got, we're neighbors. It's a really big, small town, the whole state.
Oh, yeah. It's even bigger than that. Like, I was hunting caribou in Newfoundland last fall, and I'm you know, staying at the hotel in a little town called Deer Lake, and I'm having a pizza and having a glass of wine, and these four hunters come in, you know, from the Midwest. They're pretty rambunctious, and they had a great hunt, and they're still in their camo, and they're just, you know, like yucking it up, and I almost just tucked my head and walked out because I was by myself, and I just happened to you know, say how was hunting, and that just started the whole entire thing. Well, when I tell them, you know, that I'm with Canatrek, they're like, get out of here. I mean, out of the four guys, three of them had boots from us that they wore, and I think they had multiple pairs. And anyway, it just ended up being a deal. And I saw them at the airport at 4 a.m. and the guy's like, you should have just walked by. I'm like, yeah.
But that's mostly a positive experience.
Oh yeah.
When you run into that.
Oh yeah. I mean, usually people are in disbelief, right? That you work at Kennett, you know, just because our reputation is a lot bigger than our brand.
But that's got to be. And again, I imagine the personal pride that you have with that, because this is so close to you. I don't know if you tell them you're the president or not, but you play off that I work there.
I work there.
Yeah, I work in shipping. I work in shipping and receiving. Just leave it at that. I'm not responsible for any decisions or anything, because that is how I would play that too. I call it a double-edged sword. But certainly, it seems like you're the kind of person that would want to know, even if somebody had an honest complaint or an honest issue.
Oh, for sure.
You would actually want to know that as opposed to being told what you want to hear.
For sure. I mean, and the thing is, usually, you know, my biggest advantage, like when I go to the shows, I'm not necessarily the best people person or the best salesman. That's not my skill, but my skill is my knowledge, right? Like I have a 45 years of, you know, selling boots or however long it's been. It's just been ridiculously a long time. And, you know, so it's almost like anybody with foot problems or issues, you know, I mean, I pretty much have the library that I can fix them. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, as we record this, I'm 3 weeks off of spinal surgery. Yeah. I have gotten a new appreciation for what your feet mean.
Oh,
you know, because I spent a week in, I couldn't put on socks. So I was just at home. I was couch bound and you're just padding around, trying not to slip, you know, those kinds of things. And that's all I can think about because I'm still not cleared to do anything physical.
Right.
And I'm worried that, you know, okay, by fall, I should be able to be out on the mountain again.
Yeah.
And I just, I have, it's stupid the amount of time I've thought about footwear and slipping and grip and taking care of my ankles and making sure that, because I do not want to go back to the OR.
Right.
And I'm, you know, I'm reaching that age too, where all of a sudden you can't just strap any old cheap thing on your foot that'll fit and go up the hill. I need to take care of myself. And that occurs to me as like, that's where stuff like this comes in.
Especially with weight on your back. I mean, everything just gets magnified, you know, like times 10, you know, I mean, you put on, you know, 50 or 100 or heaven forbid, you know, some of the guides, I mean, they're carrying 150 pounds of meat on their back. And I mean, one misstep, and I mean, that can be a career ending injury.
As a hunter, I want to talk a little bit about your hunting experiences. But first, I want to ask Chaz a question about working for a company like Kennetrek, which isn't just a product. You have to live the lifestyle. Is it pressure to go out and kill big animals and put them on the wall in the trophy room or on the because I'm just envisioning like, man, I'd really like to work for this company. Fill out an application. Have you killed any bull elk? No, you're out. Sorry, you're out. But is there what is the approach? approach to like time off, taking time to go, like, I've got an opportunity to go hunt some elk. I've got an opportunity to do something. How is that looked at upon with an outdoor company?
I think it's, you know, just a really great place to work for. And me personally, I kind of do take it as a challenge, like, oh, I should probably hunt and do outdoors things. But we have a lot of great people working here, and we've got people that only fly fish. We've got hikers that work here. And yeah, it's just a nice, diverse bunch of people.
Nobody does walk across the street to Sims. He's going to try to apply. I'm just joking. He's a huge fly fisherman. So
I'm assuming there's no one that's just playing Fortnite in their spare time, though. I mean, I think you've got to have an understanding of what you're dealing with, right?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, everybody that works here, they don't necessarily have to hunt, but I don't think there's any anti-hunters that work here.
That would be a tough fit through the lobby every day, just gnashing your teeth.
Exactly. But I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, we just have really good quality people. And I think that as long as they can understand that we're all here to serve our customers at the end of the day, you know, then as long as they get that, then I think, you know, and they have a hard work ethic, which I think everybody does.
And there's also the part about living in Montana. Like, regardless of whether you're a hunter or you're a fisherman or you're just like hiking or camping, whatever it is, you know, we have a lot of fun at Bozeman's expense, full disclosure.
Yeah, we do.
You can see Montana from there and all the other wacky jokes. But if you didn't like that, if you didn't want to be out there, you know, you don't come to Montana because you really like having P.F. Chang's nearby, right? You know, that's
right.
You almost, I think this place weeds that out. Mm-hmm. I don't think those folks last. If they get here, they're like, oh, I can't go to all of my shopping and fine dining and think, no, realize in Bozeman, you actually can see.
Mm-hmm.
In other parts, we can't. But it just weeds those folks out because this, you've got to live this life to live here.
Yeah.
I think almost by default.
Yeah, the tough thing too is the winners. The winners are
They're not hard enough. I've been campaigning relentlessly that we just tell people that it rains bears.
Yeah,
and you'll hate it. It's 40 below all the time starting in October. The kids freeze to death on Halloween. You know, I lie a lot.
I can remember my old media guy. This is decades and decades ago, and he's out there shoveling his sidewalk in front. You know, it's just one of those late April snowstorms, wet, and his neighbor's out there shoveling, and he's like, she's like, this is just terrible. He's like, yeah, but it keeps the Californians out. And she says, I'm from California.
those hunting experiences, you casually mentioned one. We were out in the lobby. We saw the Marco Polo sheep. I mean, these are once in a lifetime things for people. And your opportunities to do that are probably a little bit better than some just being with the company, being able to go out and do some things like that. What is it like going away from Montana, going to...
I had an interest way early on in the sheep hunting and, you know, be careful what you wish for type thing. And
I don't have any interest in that.
but I developed that early on. I remember going to a show, this would be like 87, 88 or something like that. And just a young kid out of college, and I'm walking around and talking to these, you know, fish and game guys and biologists. And I'm like, you mean if I apply here and I draw a permit, I can come and hunt there on my own? And they're like, yeah, it's public land. You
right.
Knock yourself out. And so I started applying. And I've been so incredibly fortunate. I think what I would call either won or drawn, you know, once in a lifetime type hunts. I think I'm at like 35 in my career. So it's just unbelievable how lucky I am. And then my partner, Bob, I'm the luckiest hunter, you know, as far as hunt applications that I've ever heard of. And then my partner, Bob, is probably the second luckiest hunter. So we, you know, parlayed that into the boot company, you know, because it all kind of matched. And this was pre-Chaz, but, you know, it's like I drew two desert sheep tags in the same year as a non-resident. That's like the odds of that is like
so the locals hate your guts.
One in 200,000 years or something. I mean, it's just so like it had never happened before, you know, ever in history, you know, that could happen. And you know, I mean, it's just been continual. I mean, my wife said, you have to quit, you know, putting your name in the hat for, you know, winning hunts. I mean, it's gotten bad. I mean,
yeah, no,
you know,
I'm like, with her.
Like a chorus of boos when I call my name. And those are my friends.
Right. Yeah. You know,
rigged.
My house sits four lanes of interstate across from 380, the hunting district here.
Oh, yeah.
I can't sniff that tag, but I can hear those elk from my front door.
Yeah, so, that's great.
Oh, it's a drag. I have the absolute. I can't draw the tags where they're like basically unlimited, but not unlimited.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we have 9,000 of these for in-state residents. I'm like, okay, well, that's right down the road. Nope, I get nothing.
Sorry.
I've had zero luck.
I'm sorry.
But so the other side of that is like we see Canatrek with some of the hunters that you mentioned, meat eater guys. So things like that with the Randy Newbergs of the world and the people who are involved in the industry and the kind of the TV and the video. That is a world that has grown and gotten to be so interesting to me because there isn't anybody who doesn't know somebody who's trying to make their own TV show, who's trying to make their own, you want to be on Hunt TV. And to reach the level of those names is extremely difficult. But you've got to be inundated with these people and requests you know, sponsorships and products to where that's got to get a little crazy on its own. So with the relationships you've had with those guys, how do you approach that industry in the part of Canatrek?
I mean, we have a few, you know, we have a few different partners that we've worked with for a long time that, you know, we tend to not bounce around, right? So we try to stay with them for a longer period of time. And you always, I think it was J.C. Penney that wrote one time, like he was 100% convinced, you know, that 50% of his advertising was absolutely being flushed down the toilet. He just couldn't decide which 50. Right? And I mean, there's some truth to that. It's so hard. I mean, it's so hard to track response and to know, and especially these days, because, you know, with social media and we kind of have a toe in every single marketing method, I think we do all of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they all cross over and, you know, you just try to navigate and do your very best to determine, you know, what's working and what's not working. And we're always trying to trim and trying to be more efficient, but I still have that same thought. Half of it's a waste and I have no idea which half.
Well, it's become it's a household name in Montana for sure. And I'm certain outside of it, it is also.
Yeah. Newfoundland's about as far from here.
Yeah, exactly. You're in one of those industries where there are benchmarks that you've made and you've done that here. You've got one across the street with Sims with fishing where it's funny because it reaches a point where you're almost not cool anymore to some people. Because you're wearing it to impress people, which hunting is a little different because you try not to run into other people.
Right.
So,
right.
But I feel like if I'm wearing these boots and I run into somebody, I should have an elk that I'm dragging out. And that's kind of the
or at the very least, should be getting into a much nicer truck. Because that just speaks to a level of seriousness, you know. I think
be further from the road.
Shouldn't be at the gas station, should I?
Right.
What about the outdoor industry? Is that, I mean, because that I mean, you know, my son mentions me, he's like, oh, I could be a YouTuber. Please don't. Just, we're putting aside money for you to go to college, kid. Sure. So please go at least get a business degree before you put all your chips on YouTube. You know, is that something that you feel a responsibility to, or are you kind of a viewer to it, watching that whole thing grow? Because at some point you're so entangled in it that it would be almost hard to find where one begins and the other ends.
Yeah, I mean, we for sure are involved in all of those aspects. You know, the way I look at it is that you're, you know, each individual customer spends, you know, they kind of have their thing. There's not, you know, I mean, we're in the industry, so we're probably dabbling in all of them, right? I mean, Chaz, you're in everything, right?
Yes.
That is the correct answer, Chaz. Yeah. You don't want to say no.
No.
Was I supposed to be doing something? Yeah.
You don't have to answer those calls from the guy with the GoPro on his head, do you?
No, one of the really cool things about my job, I feel like, especially when I first came here, I'm like, oh my gosh, so-and-so wears our boots and so-and-so wears them. And it's just really crazy. I mean, everything from a Randy Newberg. We even have people from major network television.
Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Right. I've heard of him.
Yeah. Can you get him on our podcast?
He does a podcast like this one. A lot of people don't know that.
Similar.
Yeah, it's just nuts. The other day, there was a guy from Mountain Men that kind of hit us up about our boots being the best. And there was even a deal. Jim's going to hate me for even bringing it up, but Destination Bigfoot wears our boots.
Oh, I love those guys.
Doesn't sound like your job's very hard.
I haven't harvested one of those either.
There's some tough days, but it's pretty nice. We have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. We like I say, we've been really, really fortunate. And I mean, you know, like when you talk about secrets to success, I mean, I remember my old boss used to say, I showed up every day.
Yeah. Step one.
That's step one, you know, and then to me, the perfectionist, the bulldogged determination, you know, it's just like, just do not accept no. I mean, just, you know, hit it. And
I feel so much better as a parent. My only advice to my kids that I've been able to come up with on my own is show up on time and stay till the job's done.
Yeah.
Like everything else will work itself out.
Yeah.
But now I feel a lot smarter because when he says it sounds better, because he actually turned it into something. They're looking at me going, what do you know about anything? Riding mom's coattails. You know, and obviously your time's incredibly valuable and we appreciate that. I've got two questions before I'm done. I don't know about you, but what are your adventures planned for your Newfoundland Northwest Territories stuff for 2024? What can you talk about that you've got on tap?
Yeah, 2024. So so when I say be careful what you wish for, right? I kind of, you know, because I got into bow hunting, and so I've been really avidly pursuing, you know, what's called the Super Slam, which would be the North American 29 species with a bow, which is absolutely stupid. I'll just tell you right now. to even embark on
There's
that.
29?
It's so dumb.
I am behind.
But anyway, so I'm down to, I've only got four left. And so, you know, I've pretty much all I have left is grizzly bear, brown bear, tule elk, and coos deer.
I'd save the bears for last two.
Well, so that's my next
you
one.
You might not make it the rest
about,
of them.
When you're asking about the next one, it's Alaska grizzly.
Where
you
at?
Know, in northern Alaska there, out of Fairbanks, kind of towards Kotzebue.
Nice.
And yeah, it's a bow hunt.
Arrows make them mad.
Yeah, kind of on a salmon stream. And it's just a chance, you know. I mean, you know, by and large, you could just spend, you know, 6 days in a tent with,
right,
you know, with a guy named Rob or whatever.
Oh, boy.
It's like never see a bear. I have no idea.
I've been to Alaska four times, and I've always been happy not to see a bear.
Yeah.
Because we've got scary bears. They've got nightmare fuel.
Yeah.
I'm starting to wonder what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
The sheep hunting was one thing. That's just exhausting, but a sheep's not going to take your face off.
Yeah.
But wow.
That is a lot. My last question would be, you know, as all of us, we are concerned about hunting, but we don't want anybody hunting in our spots. In the state of Montana, we've seen more hunters, especially during bow season. How do you walk that line? What do you see as, like, especially in this state, but more so hunting in general, into what the future of this is? You mentioned, we've talked about the anti-hunters. We've talked about the people who light up on social media just for dead animals. But as an industry, you're reliant on the future of this as well. What do you see? How do you see that going with what's going on with hunting in this country overall? Where's the future of it?
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, you get into some super challenging issues. You know, public land access is probably the biggest threat to hunting that I see, you know, and that you know, as we move more towards a European model of privatization of wildlife, I mean, you know, supposedly the state, you know, owns all of the animals, right? Well, if you don't have any access to, whether it's public ground or private ground, you know, because that becomes an economic, you know, reason there, and your average blue collar hunter, You know, like what's an average elk hunt? You know, it's going to be $10,000 now. I mean, you know, a lot of guys hear that and they're just like, I'm out, you
right.
know, yeah. Or somebody's kids or something like that.
That's the one I worry about.
You know, it's like the youth coming up, especially
so many challenges.
Yeah. They're fighting video games and, you know, just living in a, you know, in a digital world and not having that appreciation for the outdoors. So I think things like, you know, Cub Scouts or different things, organizations like that become more and more important. And one of the things that we're able to do, you know, now that we have success, I'm not 100% so sure some days, but as we become more successful, we donate a tremendous amount of products, I mean, to conservation organizations and you know, different foundation banquets and things like that, whether it's Elk Foundation, Sheep Foundation, you know, all of those different organizations that have hunting or, you know, ecological support, you know, as kind of their mantra, their reason for existence. And boy, we've been able to raise just millions of dollars over these years, these decades, you know, which is really a huge benefit to me. Like, because, you know, even though that doesn't give you necessarily the feel good of the customer testimonials, it gives me a feel good because I know that those are really important things.
Well, you have to be an advocate for those groups yes. that are out there trying to help the lifestyle, the tradition, the everything about hunting that we value in it.
Yes.
But you know, on the inside of it, there's different groups that are also infighting among themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Guides
oh, yeah.
versus landowners mm. versus hunters themselves, public right. hunters, and all of it. We see it here all the time. So I think investing in the people out there who are just trying to keep hunting alive, keep mm-hmm. it going, and get more people to continue with it is extremely valuable. So I can understand that the company getting involved in those things.
Mm-hmm. And we love all of our customers equally well.
Yeah, right.
Well, that land access is so key, and especially, you know, I mean, you'll appreciate this as someone who's seen Montana grow and change.
Yes.
So much of it comes, when you talk to older hunters, so much of it comes from, well, my dad and I could just go out there.
Oh, yeah.
And we could just go out. And it, once that goes away, mm-hmm. once you can't just go do it, mm-hmm. all of those distractions get magnified. All of the, right. you know, whether it's the new kind of culture around children's athletics or video games or all the phones and everything else. Once it's not easy access, mm-hmm. just the access, the hunts are the hunts, but the access, the ability to do it, that is the magic of Montana in my mind,
right.
is that it's right there. Mm-hmm. You want to go as you can go as hard as you want in this place, and if that slips, then you lose that magic. You lose that special sauce that is living here. So I mean, you're to be commended for keeping an eye on that. That's outstanding.
And I love it as well, right? I mean, like I used to laugh that you had to drive 60 miles away from Bozeman. I called it the donut, right? Like you couldn't stay within 60 miles of Bozeman. And I'm like, oh. No, she's 90 now.
Right.
And now I'm like, it's 150 now. Because you just cannot, you know, get away. Because everybody's here for the, you know, by and large, they're all here for the same reason. They
sure.
love the outdoors. And, you know, you can't blame them for that. But, man, you go to a trailhead or something and you can't even get a parking spot, you know. And mm-hmm. you think, okay, there's, you know, 200 guys on this trail. You know, it's like, well, you know, it's just different. But all you got to do is run down to Arizona and climb Camelback and you'll still appreciate our solitude.
Oh, yeah. Right. Absolutely.
Well, Jim, Chaz, thank you so much for taking the time. Welcoming us in. I can't talk for a living. You never know it. I've got so many individual questions. Now I have shoe questions, but that can wait till we're done here. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Of course. Cool to go on the road and do this.
Yeah. No, we got
our first time we've done that. We'll do it again.
We don't have to sit in the studio.
Absolutely.
Bums anymore. All right. Well, we'll be back next week.